We have former Senate staffer Jessica Young, who has left us and onto bigger and better things, much more exciting, I'm sure. But Jessica Young is here with us from Medical Alley to tell us about today's innovations. Jessica.
Okay, we're rolling. Good morning, Madam Chair. Better? Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jessica Young, and I am with the Medical Alley Association. Thank you for having us this morning and giving us a chance to present to you today. I look forward to sharing a bit about our association and then letting you hear directly from some of our member companies who are innovating in the senior care space. So I will start with a bit of background on the Medical Alley Association. So this is up on your screen. Founded in 1984, the Medical Alley Association is the connector for the most diverse and influential healthcare community in the world. Our mission is to elevate the Medical Alley region as the global epicenter of health innovation and care. With representation from every sector of healthcare and a board of directors comprised of leaders from across the healthcare ecosystem, the Medical Alley Association represents the leaders and the companies who are committed to envisioning the new patient experience, building economic models for value-based care, and redefining the medical supply chain, ultimately transforming the future of healthcare. And on this slide, I just wanted to show the committee some of Medical Alley Association's member companies. The companies you see on the screen here are our foundational members. And we are pleased to share with the committee that our association has grown to close to 700 members in total. Our members touch virtually every sector of the healthcare industry: medical device, biotech, payer, provider, digital health, and everything in between. And today you will get the chance to hear from three incredible Medical Alley Association member companies: GrandPad, OhmCare, and LifeSpark. They will share with you ways their companies are innovating in the senior care space and improving care and quality of life for our seniors. So at this point, I will turn it over to our testifiers. Our first presenter is Josh Berg with LifeSpark. Afterwards, you'll hear from GrandPad and then finally OhmCare. Madam Chair, we can take questions after each presenter or after the full presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Jessica. And after Medical Alley has their three testifiers, we'll have Don Simonson from Trellis. And members, we can ask questions as we go, but each one is given about 7 to 8 minutes to do their presentation. And then you can ask questions either during or after, but just be cognizant of the clock. Mr. Josh Berg from LifeSpark, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. As you mentioned, my name is Josh Berg with LifeSpark. Been here about 3 years now and a member of Medical Alley for a little over a year. So excited to be here and excited to talk to you a little bit about what we're doing at LifeSpark. There's a lot of slides here. I'm gonna skip over a bunch of them. Wanted them for your reference and resource later on. So if I start skipping through and you get confused, just let me know. Just wanted to start out with this slide. This really encapsulates everything that we believe in at LifeSpark. We really want to be able to help people age magnificently, live the way that they want, and really spark lives. And I mean, this is just a beautiful representation of what we want to see with our clients, but also with our staff and our team and our partners. Our mission at LifeSpark is, as it states, to spark lives and empower seniors to age magnificently. And this transcends all settings. It's agnostic to payer. It doesn't matter where somebody lives. We really want people to, like I said, live their lives in a sparked way and do so in any way that they want. I'm not going to read through this entire slide, but it really gives a little bit more of a background on our mission and what we believe in. And really what I'm going to talk about a little bit today is the tech-enabled home-based delivery system that we call LifeSpark Complete, and how we believe that that is the solution for our broken system that we have right now. This is the problem. This is the villain. This is our current healthcare system in our view. And folks go through life. They have their ups and downs. They have their challenges. They end up in and out of the hospital, back and forth with doctor's appointments, on and off different medications, kind of all over the place and on this roller coaster of healthcare crisis that we call it. And this is really what our system, we believe, currently represents, reinforces, and enables in what we're trying to break and get people off of or keep them off of altogether. So we see LifeSpark Complete and the work that we're doing with our organization, with our partners, to really change that experience for that person. Now, we can't remove every life challenge or variable, but we can certainly smooth it out. We can be proactive and preventative. And we believe we can also, with that life experience side, as people are aging, as they're having their challenges, we can still increase somebody's life quality and experience and be able to age magnificently, even if they have some other stuff going on. And that's where our whole person approach, it's not just buzzwords that have been out there for a long time now. We really believe in it, and it's what we believe is what's going to solve and start to break, in a good way, the system into the future. This is just the quadruple aim, looking for better health for our clients, better experience for our clients and our families at a lower cost to them and to the system, and then also for our team to be able to love what we're doing. And again, just this really just kind of encapsulates kind of what we're about and how we're going to introduce a better way of aging. I'm going to skip over this slide and come back to it. And this is LifeSpark Complete in a one-slide nutshell right here. And really, it starts with our trusted advisor, the person who is could be an RN, an OT, a clinician, but somebody that gets your or the person's life challenges. They're going to get to know them inside and out and be able to help turn their life plan into actionable steps and to really kind of wrap around a person no matter where they are, completely independent, living in their own home or in an independent living community, all the way to at the late stage of late life or hospice needs in a memory care or wherever they're at. This person is there to be along for the ride and to really help the client, their family, and the team in general, kind of be that quarterback. They develop a life plan with the client and their families in really encapsulating the seven elements that we call them, the seven essential elements that include like purpose and belonging and your home and your finances and your health, which is one piece of that, but we believe it's just one piece of that. And really getting to know the person and discovering what their desires and passions and interests are, and then being able to support them in whatever way that we can. We provide 24/7 365 assistance, and that includes in-home primary care. So our nurse practitioners and our docs can go out to a person's home, go into that assisted living, go into the memory care, meet them in the long-term care. And, you know, it, like I said, it's completely agnostic to setting, and we can bring the right services at the right time to these folks and really be proactive and preventative. Yes.
Can you hang on 1 second? I guess the Zoom people aren't getting the sound. So they're trying to fix it.
And that was a great presentation.
It was awesome, Josh.
Like it felt
just
good.
Like that. I hope they saw the slides.
Testing. Testing.
Nathan Voigt, can you hear me? Nope, he can't hear me.
What about now?
Nathan Voigt, can you hear me now?
There it
I can hear you now.
Yes.
For the first time.
Okay, sorry about that, Zoom people. You couldn't hear us. All right.
Oh, no problem.
You missed a little presentation, but we'll go back to Josh Berg. For those on Zoom that couldn't hear, you're in the Aging and Long-Term Care Committee. It's Wednesday, February 23rd, and we have an agenda from Medical Alley. Presenter Josh Berg is up right now from LifeSpark. Then we have Nathan Voigt from GrandPad, Lisa Lavin from OhmCare, and then after that will be Don Simonson from Trellis. We will go back to your presentation, Josh Berg. If you want to just summarize in a minute what you said and then continue. All right, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. Again, my name is Josh Berg from LifeSpark. And for folks on Zoom, you didn't mention much. It was just me talking. So you saw the slides. You saw the words. Hopefully it captured a lot of things. But really, just getting into this slide of what LifeSpark Complete is, and it's what we believe at LifeSpark is the solution to the villain, the problem, which is the current healthcare system as we see it. And what we view as a solution, or the solution, is LifeSpark Complete, to keep people off of the roller coaster, healthcare crisis roller coaster, prevent them from getting on it. And one of the main components of that is this slide here. Already talked about the trusted advisor. They're along for the ride. They're the quarterback. They're the person, the expert in the room for the family members, for the client, to really break down all the complicated pieces of the experience of our healthcare system. Developing that plan along with that client and their family, bringing in nurse practitioners and docs for that in-home primary care, and really leveraging that in whatever way makes sense for the client, which could also mean telehealth and in-home visits virtually to keep people out of the hospital or out of the office unnecessarily, and really kind of wrap them around with some of our technology that we're building and have access to. So the behind-the-scenes stuff, there's a slide later on that'll get into that, but I'm certainly not the expert on that. But really all of this, along with our high-performance network, which is just a fancy way of saying our really best-in-class partners that we work with, other senior care organizations, payers, health systems like Northridge Ridgeview and North Memorial, and some of the payers that we work with like UCare, it rounds out of how we really want to do this in a completely different way, a non-reactive, non-fee-for-service, forward-thinking way of delivering the care and supports to our seniors. I'm certainly not going to get into this slide. This kind of just really kind of pictures out everything that I was talking about there. Here's a piece of the technology side of it, so I'll just jump right into that bottom middle section, really where we're layering in various pieces of information. So everybody knows that we have an electronic health record and EMRs and claims data and all that stuff. That's a part of this. But then we can layer in a lot of the social determinant data, the consumer data, the demographic, the wearable, all the stuff, the extra technology that we can access and leverage. And then the secret sauce on top of that is what I was talking about, that the life advisor, the life manager does in discovering who the person is, what their purpose, their passion, what their plan is, what their goals are. How often do they go to church? Do they go visit their grandkids? Do they play cards, poker with their buddies? Do they go to the salon to get their hair done? All of the things that really make us who we are is in there as well. And then we can take that information, throw it into a data lake, data pool, data ocean, whatever it's called, and take the AI and predictive analytics and be out in front of everything that is happening. And we can see opportunities and or challenges before they come and really alert family members of that client or the team of how do we get out in front of this and prevent something bad from happening and keeping them off of that roller coaster. This is just a slide that kind of overviews what LifeSpark is. Everything from the everyday supports like finding transportation, getting meals delivered, working to get your yard done, to late life and hospice and everything in between. This is just an example too of, and we have oodles of examples. We've been collecting data for years and years on how we can actually translate this into something that is actionable and has outcomes. And aside from the outcome of living well and aging magnificently, there's also financial and system-wide savings and things that we've produced by implementing this program and this system. You know, this is a Georgia story, and in the next two slides, it gets into the details of, you know, in a four-month spread, spending over $30,000 to the system, to after implementing this and wrapping around and putting some of the proactive preventative stuff in, zero hospitalizations, and reducing that cost significantly. And that's kind of where we can get, and we have gotten a lot of traction with payers, with systems, with CMS and others to see that there is tremendous value in this outside of the main value of helping folks age magnificently. These are just a few other outcomes. You know, significant reduction in emergency visits, rehospitalizations, and inpatient admissions, those avoidable ones that we can really help with. And then here's some of the costs and figures. And, you know, just in a time period alone, preventing 130 hospitalizations, with an average hospitalization costing about $13,000, that's, you know, a significant chunk of money. And as we extrapolate that out to serving seniors across Minnesota and in across many other states, we will see that continue to save the system tremendously. And this is where I'll kind of end with the main LifeSpark piece of this. This is Dr. Bill Thomas. So if you don't know who Dr. Bill Thomas is, Google him after the fact. A renowned geriatrician based out of New York, started the Eden Alternative Greenhouse work, Minka Houses. He's our chief independence officer, and this really, again, encapsulates what we're all about, that medical care is necessary, but it's not sufficient to a life worth living. The medical stuff, it's important, but it's everything else that makes us who we are. So, I mean, if I can leave you with just a few things today, just know the system is broken. It has been broken a long time. We've ignored it a long time. We've enabled it for a very long time. But there are those of us that are out here trying to change this and work with a lot of other innovative organizations. We know we can't do it alone. Isolation is fatal for our clients. It's also fatal for our organizations. And we believe, you know, with our LifeSpark Complete offering, you know, it's payer agnostic, it's setting agnostic. It can really go to and work with anybody, anywhere. And this is the new truth. I mean, and it's being embraced and it's driving change. Life isn't just about medications and surgeries and doctors. It's about grandkids and golfing and friends and poker and getting your hair done and seeing the Vikings play. And when we do, we find that we spark people's lives, we improve the entire whole person, and we help them age magnificently, and we also save the system tremendous amounts of resources along the way. So I'll end there. If there's time, I'll get back into the transportation stuff, but I would encourage you to check out our website, or on the slides, there's a link to our website. There's a video on there called Going South. It's on. As soon as you click on our website, it's the first video you see. Watch it. It's like a 3-minute video, and it tells the story way better than I did with an actual example of a mom and a daughter and how LifeSpark Complete can come in and help them out. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Berg. And the website's LifeSpark.com?
LifeSpark.com, yes.
I have a quick question, and then Senator Abler, and then we'll move on. Is it available across the whole state, or is it mostly metro-centric?
Madam Chair, thank you for the question. We're working right now in like the 10-12 county metro area. We are expanding, not just within Minnesota. As you may have heard, within the last year, we merged and acquired Tealwood Senior Living Management. So they have communities across the entire state as well as into Wisconsin. And then over this year and into the future, we will be announcing expansion outside of Minnesota as well. So.
Thank you. Senator Abler.
Well, thank you very much, and I appreciate the discussion and trying to help the staff we have to go further and improve the lives of individuals and actually not need so much care and all. So we're doing a bunch of work on the other committee as well on that topic, and Mr. Berg, welcome to that continuing discussion. So I'd only have two questions, and maybe they're even too long for now, but the easy one is, counting this one and other monitoring kind of programs, what percentage of people in the state do you think have access to anything resembling this? Just your program, or there's some other, not to criticize your business, but it's a great idea. So what percentage have access to anything resembling this?
Madam Chair and Senator Abler, thanks. I can't say the specifics. I think what I can say confidently is no one else is doing this here in Minnesota or elsewhere. And I think that's where, you know, working with some of our partners, including UCare and some of our other payers, as well as CMS and CMMI, to be able to expand and bring the accessibility of this to everyone. And that's where we're working within a population right now of, you know, about 10,000 folks. But as we are able to get this included and working with, like I said, the payers to include it in Medicare Advantage plans and other options, then we can continue to.
And Madam Chair, I didn't realize what a softball I was giving you there. So what are the barriers? You and I and this people on this committee have sat through discussions for literally decades now. For me, that's really sad to say, about here's an amazing idea, it's going to save money, it's going to be way better, and then to implement it, the fiscal note says you have to pay $10 million to save $100 million. You know you're going to save $100 million. So just briefly, we can take it offline, because we need to pour gas on this fire, Madam Chair, and just get, everybody needs a chance to be exposed to this. So just what barriers have you seen with having, besides just logistical ones, but what governmental or systems barriers are there to people not wanting to do this?
The government,
DHS getting in the way and so on.
Madam Chair and Senator Abler, I think what we see, or I can say very clearly, is the barriers are perhaps the system itself. I mean, it's a system we need to disrupt and we need to pour gas on. And there is a lot of resistance to that change because it disrupts and impacts the system itself. And there are a lot of folks and organizations that don't want things to change because that changes where the money flows and how the money flows and different things like that. As far as the regulatory side of things go, I mean, I think what we've really seen over the last 2 years is with the changes with some of the telehealth and some of the expansion of opportunities to be able to bring this in a different way and just do it more broadly, it's continuing with that innovation and allowing it to continue beyond, COVID pandemic times and really leverage and take the learnings that we've had from this and show that, you know, we can provide acute care at home, as keep somebody out of the hospital, provide hospital-level care in their own home with their loved ones surrounding them in the comforts of their own home and everything else, keep the hospitals from having to see folks that they don't need to. We can do that. Now, there's obviously reimbursement things, but that may be at the state level, maybe at the federal level, though, where we have to continue those discussions and continue to be allowed to do this. We've had some regulatory, leniency, but there's been things allowed to happen over the last couple of years that we've been able to start getting more and more data on and run with it. And we've also seen payers and other organizations understand that we can't just keep doing what we've always done. And things do have to change. And as more and more of those partners or potential partners step up, we can ride with them. And then that's what we really need.
Senator Curran, and then we have to move on.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to follow up on that, Senator Abler, you asked the perfect question. So you just described very high level and somewhat vaguely on very specific. So I'd ask everybody that's presenting for us today, we're on the same page. We want to throw a fuel on this fire as much as we can. I look at it as, one, the technology, two, the connectivity, one, the just acceptance of human behavior. I think part of this means that families have to be involved much more accurately or much more actively than they ever have, and to keep their loved ones at home, if not their own home, the seniors, but to bring into your children. If you love your family or your parents, you dang well better bring them into your own home. And if we can provide the tools to make that easy so they can work and, the whole life balance for everybody will be greatly improved. So everybody who presents, we would like a very detailed list, even if it looks like a huge mountain to climb. Give us what are those things, from the cost, the regulatory? Everything we look at appears to be mostly regulatory, gets in the way of even the statutory barriers, so we'd love those. And you will probably find all of us, there won't be enough slots on a bill to be able to push those things through. But so everybody before, and Ms. Young, if you could gather those, we'll be on there and championing this every way we can. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator Curran. And thank you, Mr. Berg and LifeSpark. Next up online, we've got Nathan Voigt from GrandPad.
Go ahead. Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you all hear me?
Yes, we can.
And members of the committee, and it's great to hear you too. We spent the first part not hearing you, so I'm delighted to hear your voices. Great to hear Josh this morning. I have to say, we talked to a lot of people over Zoom who are not in the state of Minnesota and cannot share and commiserate with us on a cold morning like this, so it's great to see you all. Thank you for having us. I'm gonna share my screen quickly. Please tell me if this is not coming through to you all. Are you seeing it okay? From
yes.
Wherever you are?
Yep, we can see it.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Nathan Voigt, and I work for a company called GrandPad. We are based here in Minnesota. If you can see the screen behind me, we also have an office in California and our UK Europe branches in Goree, Ireland. I'm going to tell you a little bit about us, but I first want to start by saying that I think we're sitting here today on this very cold morning in Minnesota at a unique moment in healthcare. I believe that, you know, as the result of the global pandemic, and Josh touched on some of these things, we're seeing just tremendous innovation, tremendous rollout of new virtual care platforms and visions, really, of how we can deliver care better for seniors by keeping them at home, by using technology, and by really extending the reach of our care providers outside of clinics and outside of hospitals and into the home. There's a lot more to do. I think folks who have been working in telehealth and remote care for many, many years see this as really getting this boulder kind of partway up the hill. They've struggled for years to do that, and we're seeing really high adoption, and the pandemic has helped with that. I wanna talk a little bit more about that in a minute, but first, I wanna tell you a little bit about who GrandPad is so we can fit our piece of this puzzle in for you. We are a senior-focused, senior-centric, senior-friendly technology company. We have built a tablet and an entire surrounding ecosystem and support system, the sole purpose of which is to put technology in the hands of a senior that allows them safely and enjoyably from their homes to connect with family, friends, and caregivers. We only build technology for seniors. We serve seniors. That is the sole purpose of what we do. We were founded 8 years ago by a father and son who were trying to solve a problem in their own lives, which if any of you have ever delivered an iPhone 12 to an 85-year-old and hoped that they could use it effectively, you know what that problem can look like. My mother's 88, and I've rolled out a variety of technology solutions to connect with her in her home, and those tend to run into pitfalls and struggles. And there are reasons for that that have to do with age. There are reasons for that that have to do with income. There are reasons for that that have to do with access to broadband and so forth. But what we know sitting here today is that seniors do struggle with that technology. So our goal as a company, our mission, you'll see it here on the screen. We take this very seriously. This is what we start every meeting with in our company, is to improve the lives of millions of seniors by reconnecting with them, with their family, friends, and caregivers. And by caregivers, we really mean the healthcare entities that are providing care for them. We have partnerships with dozens and dozens of healthcare entities that use our senior-friendly technology to care for folks in their home. Scott and Isaac Lean were our founders. That's what they set out to do. And we really built that platform from scratch. You see a GrandPad in the picture there today, but we didn't take anything off the shelf. We built the tablet from scratch. We built the technology that runs on the tablet from scratch. We built the support system from scratch. We have a very high-touch model. And what our healthcare partners are doing is using that senior-friendly technology to deliver telehealth and remote care in the homes. I want to talk a little bit more about that technology. We'll show you some more details about how GrandPad actually works and what makes it slightly different from other kinds of technology. But first, a couple things about kind of where I think we are, where we think we are as a country here in the third year, coming into the third year of this global pandemic. Josh mentioned some of this. Just to highlight again, we are seeing a huge acceleration in what we would call hybrid models of care. By a hybrid model, I mean I see you sometimes in a clinic, I see you sometimes when I need to in person, but I want to deliver a lot of that care virtually. I want to deliver it in the home. The pandemic has really accelerated the demand for this from healthcare consumers. It's accelerated the adoption of this by healthcare providers, and Josh highlighted some of the regulatory barriers that have come down as a result of the pandemic, and I think there's continued pressure on regulatory agencies like CMS to continue to keep those barriers down. We believe that this is going to result in a movement to more longitudinal care, less episodic care. The American healthcare system is very episodic. You have a problem, I see you, I correct that problem. That's very expensive, and it doesn't tend to deliver the best outcomes, as I'm sure you all know. Longitudinal models of care, by delivering care in the home and continuing to keep eyes on patients when they're not in front of you in a clinic, results in better outcomes, and we all know this. And of course, the continued movement towards value-based models of care, Medicare Advantage plans, accountable care organizations, we think will continue to accelerate this. It makes it very attractive if you're in a value-based model to deliver care at home. And our belief at GrandPad, and we have a keen eye on this, most of the partners that we work with are serving dual eligible seniors. You know, we think that these kind of models of care are better equipped to address social determinants of health, which of course has been a primary concern for those of us working in healthcare for many, many years now. We know that those contribute dramatically to reduced healthcare outcomes. I heard a doctor say this phrase you see at the bottom of this slide, that we're entering an age where we're never going to discharge a patient. The patient will always remain in my care. We're moving away from episodic care, and we think at GrandPad, we think that's a good thing. This is a slide we use to talk about digital transformations. I think, as I've been saying, that we're in the midst of one now in healthcare. We're moving towards a model where care will become more virtual, we'll do more telehealth, more remote care, more hospital in the home. The last digital transformation that I remember in healthcare was the move to electronic health record systems. In 2005, I was working for a Blue Cross plan in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Hurricane Katrina hit. At that time, if you can believe this, only 24% of the American healthcare system had electronic health records, which today seems incredible. So many of those records were lost in that storm, and it was really a wake-up call to the entire healthcare system that we needed to move. We needed to have a digital transformation. I love this quote from the Surgeon General, Regina Benjamin, who said that, "Before Katrina, I thought I couldn't afford an EHR system, and now afterwards, I realize I can't afford not to have one. It's too risky." Of course, 12 years later, by the time Hurricane Harvey hit the Gulf, we saw a rapid increase expansion to 85%. And today, of course, most people are working on electronic health record systems. And I would say that that's kind of what we're seeing today with telehealth, with remote care, with virtual care. You see this huge spike. This is data from McKinsey here during the spring of 2020, where we see just a massive increase in telehealth adoption. Telehealth partners who came to us during that period of time were just overwhelmed. They could no longer get eyes on their folks in clinic, and they rushed technology out into the homes to do telehealth. So we saw this huge increase. But here, even as we come out of the pandemic, as vaccines are introduced, we're still seeing telehealth at about 30 times the rate it was before the pandemic. And again, there's a lot of discussion about how that will hold in certain sectors like behavioral health. That looks to continue to be increasing. People want to receive this kind of care at home, and we think there's real value in it. But I would say we're still early in this. This quote at the bottom, implementing telehealth during the pandemic was like building a plane while flying it. I think that's very true, and I think a lot of us who work in this business, in this industry, are still finding our footing and figuring out where we're going to land. But we're very hopeful about the possibilities. Our question at GrandPad, now that you understand who we are as a senior-centric, senior-focused technology company, is if the American healthcare system is going virtual, if we're going to have more remote care, more telehealth, who's going to get left behind? Who doesn't have the technology and the means and the wherewithal to engage with providers virtually? Who can't use it? Who's handshake too much to deal with a small tablet with a FireWire charging cable? Who can't understand how to get into MyChart and load a password or download an app? Who's going to get left behind? And our thesis is that it's going to be the people we can least afford to leave behind. We know this. This is really our focus at GrandPad, the problem for seniors when engaging with technology. 14% of those 71 or older have dementia. Two-thirds of those 70 and older have hearing loss. There's vision impairments. There's the lack of basic necessities, which you can imagine. The idea of buying a $1,200 iPhone 13 and connecting it to a $75 a month a Wi-Fi plan is overwhelming. SCAN, which is a very innovative Medicare Advantage plan in California, ran a survey fairly recently as they were looking at expanding telehealth, and they found a third of their Medicare Advantage members lack the technology necessary for telehealth. Landmark in California also found 25% of its Medicare Advantage members lack the technology and skills for telehealth. So there are real barriers, there are real problems, and if we're moving in that direction, these are the people we can least afford to leave behind as we move into a world of telehealth. And what's most tragic about that, this is another sort of axiom from healthcare, but we've said for many years that, you know, the most underutilized resource in the American healthcare system is the patient. Activating patient behavior, giving them power over their healthcare, letting them engage with their providers proactively when they need to, not just reactively when they're sick and have a problem, is a path to deliver better healthcare in this country. So what we believe is the solution is equitable access to virtual care, so that seniors who would otherwise struggle with this technology can participate in the innovations that are coming that I think are still really in their early stages. We're seeing so much investment in remote patient care, hospital in the home. Here in Minnesota, we've seen Mayo investing in this hospital in the home program and many, many others across the country. There's so much excitement in this space. And so how do we go do that? So this is a picture of our founder. He's still our CEO today. His name's Scott Lean, and he's meeting with Anna. Anna was one of the early testers back 7 or 8 years ago. She was 107 years old in this picture, and she's testing an early version of the GrandPad. And she helped us innovate some of the hardware technology that's still on the GrandPad today. Just to take one example, she's the person who taught us that a typical screen on a typical tablet or phone does not react well to dry skin, which is a problem for seniors. Most folks over 85, their skin gets drier. So we re-engineered the screen. Small thing, but it makes a big difference for seniors. So we started with that kind of approach, working with seniors directly, figuring out what works for them to build a whole technology platform that works for them in their homes to engage. We call it a complete solution. We design the hardware, we design the software, it's easy to use. It is all a closed network, so no one can access the senior through the GrandPad device except for their healthcare providers and any trusted family members. And I think Josh and one of the senators mentioned the benefit really for pulling family into the healthcare ecosystem for the senior. GrandPads allow you to do that. And most importantly, we bundle all of this with a very high touch model of service. There's a big red help button on that GrandPad device you see in the picture. If you hit that, you'll get a GrandPad employee. We call them our member experience folks. They answer within about 5 to 7 seconds. They can provide support and service on every part of that device. They know the healthcare organization that's providing the device, and they can help that senior get connected with people they need, get support on the device. We build LTE into the device. We train the seniors to use the device by reaching out to them proactively, teaching them how to use it, making sure they feel empowered to call us with questions, empowered to use the device, find things on there that are enjoyable, music, articles, games, so that when a healthcare provider needs to get a hold of them on that GrandPad, it's active, it's part of their life, it's how they start their day by checking the weather and looking at their calendar and are ready to engage in the healthcare that we know is so important for them. We call it our 90-90 design goal. A 90-year-old can get a GrandPad in its box, open it, and have it on, set on its charging cradle, use it and enjoy it within 90 seconds. Every device is pre-configured for the senior before it goes out to them. So what we want to do when we work with a healthcare partner is really channel all of that activity through this GrandPad, through this healthcare portal in the home, so that they can do telemedicine, remote patient care, check-ins, medication reminders. We have integration with devices that allow them to check vital signs. In fact, we're working on technology that will allow you to check vital signs using the camera on the GrandPad device itself. So imagine looking into your iPhone camera and being able to get your blood pressure. That's basically what we're doing. And so it becomes a portal in the home for the coordination of all of this care, connectivity, and as I mentioned earlier, our vision for that is a longitudinal care platform in the home that really allows the senior to participate in their own well-being, know who they're connected with, and constantly be active in their own care. We think telehealth is a great thing. Typically, when we talk about it today, it's very episodic. It means I can get an appointment to see a doctor over a phone, and that's great. But what we really want to build with our partners is a longitudinal model where the patient and the provider are connected consistently for wellness, medication, so many things that Josh mentioned as well are part of our talk track and what we want to continue to build with our healthcare partners. These are some of those partners today. One of our primary focuses are PACE organizations. We don't have those in Minnesota today, but those are all-inclusive care models where the senior joins that. It's a Medicare Advantage plan that also bundles all of the provider activity that that patient needs. Doctors, nurses, rehab therapists, they'll have Tai Chi instructors, they run social activities, they run day centers. We partner with a range of other accountable care organizations. One thing they share in common is they're serving high-risk seniors. They're typically serving seniors who are both Medicaid and Medicare eligible and don't have the wherewithal to provide the technology on their own. And most importantly, these healthcare partners just want reliable technology in the home. They want to know that it works. They want to know they can count on it. They don't want to be in the IT business. They don't want to be out there solving the problem of why the tablet doesn't work or if the battery's there. That's what we do. That's what we provide for them. Just some quick call outs and then I'll wrap up.
Thank you.
Of some of the, and Madam Chair, I can wrap now. These are just quick call ups and we can send these over to you as part of the deck that we provide after the call. Just some testimonials and outcomes that are that might be meaningful.
Oh,
and with that, I'll
so
end
much.
And take questions.
Thanks, Mr. Vogt. thanks for your presentation. It was very informative, and I've seen a grand pad, and they're pretty cool. Pretty cool things.
Good, good.
Next up, we've got Lisa Lavin from OhmCare. There she is.
Here I am.
Okay, go ahead, Lisa.
Thank you. I'm just trying to share my screen here. And for some reason, yep, you got it?
Yep, got it.
Okay, very good. Madam Chair, committee members, I am Lisa Lavin. I am founder and CEO of OhmCare. We are a digital health technology company that has developed a platform that enables rapid deployment of a home care strategy, one-touch access to telehealth services, aggregated remote patient monitoring, and medication dispensing with visual confirmation of right medication, right time, right person. We're focused in on a growing, sicker, expensive population where we've got 11,000 people every day turning age 65, and 68% of which have two or more chronic health conditions, taking 5+ medications every single day. But the problem is that 50% of this population are not taking the right medication at the right time. And this is causing, and one of the leading causes of why people end up losing their independence. And so our whole existence is to bring actual easy care into the home and to promise that medication adherence. But the good news is this really expensive population wants a solution to make medication adherence easier, to be able to get the care that they need in the home in a seamless solution. And this is why we've created an all-in-one platform that enables 2- and 3-way video calls, human and self-medication assistance, one-touch access to telehealth, the integration of both Bluetooth using the camera, biometrics, as well as integrating other peripherals so that you just have one hub of care in the home, but also aggregating the data and making sure that we're dispensing the right med at the right time, but also having an open API architecture that enables the integration with current provider organization telehealth services, as well as information systems. Our first product is called the OhmCare Home Health Hub. This is a customizable telehealth portal that enables one-touch access to care and promises real medication adherence defined as right med, right time, right person. One of the key things about our system is we have two cameras. One camera that enables visibility of a person's face and then visibility also of the pill tray. I can watch Sally dispense the medication, watch her grab it from the tray and put it into her mouth. To do what we do today, you have to show up at somebody's door, hand them the medication and watch them take it. That is just not feasible nor affordable, because today, while we have this rapid growth of people that need care, we've got a flat line of people that can provide care, a huge, huge caregiver shortage that we've got to solve for. We also know as we age, we have different needs around technology. You heard Nathan talk about this a little bit too, is it's got to be really easy to use. So we've incorporated one-touch features and calling caregivers as well as family members, but also considering sight and sound, taking into consideration we have diminished eyesight, diminished hearing, but also as we age, our hands get dry. So making a super high sensitive touch, but also lowering the internet bandwidth requirement to be able to have those 2- and 3-way video calls that are possible. Well, one of the key things that we decided very early on is we didn't want to compete with healthcare providers, but rather we wanted to be a conduit for their care into the home. So our interface is a customizable interface. We can serve up any service or pharmacy or provider via this one-touch access point in the home. We're focused on 3 very expensive segments: Medicare Advantage, where we're talking to providers that are at risk. We're focusing in on that complex chronic, 68% of Medicare members now, as well as the dual eligible. But we also know that there's other applications for this technology, whether we're talking about addressing social determinants of health, asynchronous care, post-discharge care models, and so on. And just to let you know a little bit of where we're at, from a market approach standpoint, we are currently in our final phase of pre-commercial pilot with Thrifty White Pharmacy and Ecumen Senior Care. We have been listed and actually selected by AARP as a portfolio company, and we have a growing list of commercial commitments with partners, both on the provider side as well as pharmacy side, and we'll be rolling out nationally later on this year. So I'll stop there, see if there's any questions.
Thank you so much, Ms. Lavin. So that little device, the pills are actually inside there?
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you for the question. Yes, the medication is preloaded direct from the pharmacy in the pouch medication, and we dispense the pouches and alert the user when it's time to take medication. And we also provide the means of human or self-medication assistance.
Thank you. That was one of the issues that my parents, that I dealt with, was those darn pills. And they say 30% of emergency room visits are because of mismanagement of pills. So I was calling my dad every night, did you take your pills? But it would be nice to be able to see if he really did take his pills. Any questions, members? All right, thank you so much, Ms. Lavin. Jessica, did you want to do closing comments for Medical Alley, or do you want me to move on to? I'll move on to Don Simonson from Trellis, and then we can come back if there's time. Ms. Simonson, oh, you're here in person.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for coming, Don Simonson from Trellis. Go ahead.
Thanks, Chair Housley and members. Just good to be here today. So for the record, I'm Dawn Simonson, and I'm the president and CEO of a nonprofit organization, Trellis. You may have known us by our former name, Metropolitan Area Agency on Aging. That's a mouthful, and we have rebranded to Trellis. We're an organization that supports older adults and community partners. So I'm going to talk about our work, which is primarily work that is focused on low and moderate income seniors who generally don't qualify for elderly waiver or alternative care, but we really focus on helping older adults stay at home. And I think this is important because it helps prevent spend down to Medicaid and nursing home placement. Now, Trellis is the Minnesota Board on Aging's designated area agency on aging. We serve the 7-county metro region. And in our role, we develop services, community services, and we also administer federal and state funds that support our delivery network. Now, today my comments are going to focus on something very basic, home-delivered meals. Not so shiny, not so technical, but really one of the very most critical services for older adults to help them stay independent. Now, home-delivered meals sometimes is also known on Meals on Wheels, so just know that they're used synonymously. But to make it even a little more confusing, here in the metro region, we also have a very fine organization called Metro Meals on Wheels. But I'll use the term home-delivered meals. Now, we know seniors have been heavily impacted by the pandemic, and many continue to self-isolate and have chronic diseases that make them vulnerable to poor outcomes from COVID. So the need for home-delivered meals has really been accelerating and has put demand in overdrive. Now, the pandemic also forced home-delivered meal providers to innovate, and we support four very fine nonprofit organizations in the metro. And these organizations have really worked to scale home-delivered meals to make certain they're delivered on time and tailored to health conditions and cultural needs. So some examples of innovation, really starting to focus on the production of meals themselves. In the past, some of our providers depended on caterers, but we have seen in the last several years, and particularly during the pandemic, that providers have developed their own kitchens, and they're collaborating. So they're reducing administrative costs. They also have better control over staff costs and over costs of raw food. Now, this is important because during the pandemic, when schools closed, our providers in the past had depended on the same caterers that serve schools. So when schools closed, meals were not being delivered to schools, and that cut off the supply of meals for older adults here in the metro. Now, two of our providers, Open Arms and Metro Meals on Wheels, as I said, they partner. That gives them control over their costs and helps them ramp up as needed. Now, in addition, our providers over the last 2 or 3 years have really had an increasing focus on culturally specific meals. So we are now seeing these scratch kitchens focus on producing medically tailored meals, salt and carbohydrate controlled meals, and diabetic friendly meals for all people, all older adults, including cultural meals for Hmong, Somali, and Latino elders. Now this work is currently being expanded, underway with Open Arms and with support from the Minneapolis Department of Health. Early in the pandemic, when adult day services centers closed and a large number of Somali elders no longer had access to a healthy meal, we saw a very fine community restaurant and caterer, Afro Deli, step up. And in a partnership with Metro Meals on Wheels and our support, they were able to very quickly fill that gap in meals for Somali elders. They were no longer getting a meal through their adult day center and needed a meal delivered at home. In the time from April 2020, very early in the pandemic, through December of 21, Afro Deli and Metro Meals on Wheels served over 1,400 people. Now, going forward, Metro Meals on Wheels has partnered with two North Minneapolis organizations, Community Enhancement Services and Al Muan, to deliver halal meals to African elders. Now, these meals are often delivered a week's worth at a time in frozen meals, so it's an efficient model and it gives older adults choice in what they eat and when they eat. In addition to home-delivered meals, providers during the pandemic also became very concerned about isolation of the older adults they were serving. We were able, through some federal stimulus funds, to provide funding for them to do routine wellness checks. These wellness checks provided social contact. They also helped connect older adults to other services, reducing isolation, loneliness, and depression. Now, at times, these telephone calls were really life-saving. So an example, Optage Senior Dining, one of our providers, called one of their clients who they learned then had moved into assisted living and no longer needed a home-delivered meal. But the client's spouse had lost his housing and was living in his vehicle. He couldn't afford his diabetes medications and was at risk of losing his leg. So Optage was able to connect him then to housing support and medication supports. And this gentleman had veterans benefits that he was just simply not utilizing. So of the 7,000 or so recipients of home-delivered meals in the metro, our senior nutrition providers really focused in on those most isolated and made telephone reinsurance calls to 1,500 older adults during 2020 and 2021. Now, healthy meals are essential and the demand for meals continues to grow. Expenses are also growing, the cost of raw food, of course, and labor. And COVID-19 just will continue to impact the daily lives of older adults. And where we had rarely saw waiting lists pre-pandemic, even with the influx of federal emergency and stimulus funding, we are seeing wait lists now. And I think it's important, just a few facts. In 2021, senior nutrition providers delivered over 1 million meals to 7,000 older adults. In 21, this was a 10% increase over 20. And we have seen the demand grow for 2022. Now, of importance, we've spent through all the resources we have available up through 2022 in contractual commitments. We've had to reduce funding to our four providers by $3.4 million compared to 2021. We were spending through all the federal money. As of January, here in the metro, we have 373 older adults waiting for home-delivered meals in the metro region, and the number of meals per week for existing clients is being reduced. Now, as I said, these clients are generally not eligible for elderly waiver or alternative care. They're on the cusp. They're still low and very modest income, under 200% of poverty. These older adults also contribute to support the cost of meals, and our providers draw on voluntary support often to deliver the meals. Now, senior meal providers are not only innovators, they're also incredibly efficient. So I would just, I know we're focused on innovation, and I think thank you for that opportunity to describe innovations in home-delivered meals, but would also ask your support to consider an increase in the state funding for home-delivered meals that coincides with the federal Older Americans Act program. State allocation is currently at $2.69 million for senior nutrition, and it hasn't been increased for many, many years. I would ask you to consider supporting an appropriation to build the funding, to bridge the funding gap for the upcoming fiscal year, and then let's have a conversation about the longer term. So I know that home-delivered meals is something we really understand. Many of us have had older adult neighbors and family members who've received those meals. We've also delivered those meals, and it's just a core service that I think we can all be united as one of the most essential for helping older adults stay independent at home. So thank you. I appreciate having the opportunity to talk about the good work of our provider community, and happy to take questions.
Thank you so much, Ms. Simonson. Members, are there any questions? I have a question.
Yeah.
How is your workforce? Do you have enough people to be working for you, or are they volunteers, or how does it... Are you short?
Are we short? Right now in the home-delivered meals program here in the metro, we're okay. But the number of volunteers available to deliver meals has declined. So we're seeing that volunteers who deliver are being asked to deliver more meals, more routes, more times per week or per month. We are definitely focused on cost for home-delivered meals. The cost of raw food and the cost of labor are critical. Now, in other services, for example, homemaker services that we support, definitely a workforce issue there. But home-delivered meals holding steady. Okay.
Good. Thank you. So thank you, Ms. Simonson. Do any of our members have... Oh, Senator Curran.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If Mr. Berg could hop back up. It appears we have at least a few minutes before we end.
For sure, Senator Curran. Mr. Berg, announce yourself.
Mr. Berg, appreciate the information you had before. So now we have time for a couple more detailed questions. It looks like you're building from a connectivity perspective, which it looks natural, ADT in the types of existing home monitoring or connectivity. So is the vision that In addition to home monitoring activities, right, literally the function of movement within a home, which security systems provide today, heating, cooling warnings, are you looking, as well as wearable devices, to do that entirely? Is that, I assume that's on the map, and if so, where are you on that map?
Madam Chair, Senator Grant, thank you. Josh Berg from LifeSpark.
Yeah, just turn the laptop. Thanks. Thank you.
Yeah. Again, thank you, Madam Chair and Senator. Yes, so technology is very much embedded in everything that we do. I didn't touch on that. I am not the CTO. Jason Winnell is for LifeSpark, but he's been building a team over the last 3 years to develop our electronic life record, is what we're calling it. So taking EMRs, electronic health records, to a whole nother scale and level, and then incorporating all of the technology that we have at our disposal, whether it's the telehealth, virtual visit type stuff, to the wearables, to the tech that can be with inside somebody's home, and being able to incorporate all of that together. Now, I can have Jason or somebody from the tech team follow up with you, because that's way above my brain waves and what all of that stuff means. But we're progressing, and this is precisely where all of our recent investments have been made over the last couple of years. So we did some private equity raises over the last couple of years, and have been spending millions to develop this tech piece.
Yeah, excellent. I appreciate that feedback. And yes, I would love to have them come down and actually take us to wherever their test facilities are, where it's in place. I see it as a complete transformation, not only of in-home, regardless of what facility you're in. you know, that your own home, your children's home, or somebody else that loves you home, as well as our entire elder care facility network today, the nursing homes, the assisted living, and for us to be able to provide that real-time monitoring, literally hospital room capabilities to notify the healthcare provider and the family before the patient even understands they're having an issue. I just want to understand how close are we to that, and so again, so we can help pour fuel on that fire to make it roll. We've stripped billions of dollars out of this healthcare network. I'm the last of the baby boomers, so there's going to be great need, and we've seen the collapse of the market regardless of what we've done in COVID. And so we need to change that, the thought process, the engagement of families who need to care for their elderly, and make sure that they know these systems are available as soon as possible, early on. Everybody has a story of basic medication maintenance, one of the key things. We've all done it. Those are the simple things, but I think the wearables and the awareness will bring us, get us that little quantum leap, and provide the true care that we need today. So I would love to see, and that goes, that invitation goes to everybody who's presented today, would love to see that technology and show us as a committee. If you've got a test facility set up, I'm sure we'd love to go see it. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator Curran. And seeing no more questions, I thought, since we didn't do introductions from our members early on, I wanted to make sure we had enough time for all of our presenters. So thank you so much. This was very interesting. Thank you, Jessica Young, for organizing some of your members from Medical Alley to present for us, because this is my favorite committee ever, the aging and long-term care, and helping our seniors age magnificently in their homes, from all of these technologies to meal delivery and other things. This has been really, really good. And going forward, I'd like to do more of these kinds of things. And I'm just wondering, we'll go around and introduce ourselves for those watching on Zoom or YouTube, and state your district and maybe what you'd like to see come out of this committee. And I'm going to start way in my far left, Senator Abler.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not sure if I really enjoy being referred to as being on your far left. Anyway, I prefer the word temperate. Anyway, thank you, Madam Chair, Senator Jim Abler from Anoka and Coon Rapids and Ramsey and Andover for the time being. This is a really important topic, and I hope as we go forward with this work here, we can dovetail with the committee that we serve on, the Human Services Finance Committee, to find barriers why this sort of thing can't happen. It simply has to happen. And so I'm all in on that, and what a great presentation today. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Abler. Senator Rood.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Kerry Rood, and I represent all of Aiken and Crow Wing County in Senate District 10. And I thought this was a really great presentation today. Most of you know that I took both my parents, they passed at 97, and I took them on their journey for six long years. So we used a lot of the different types of healthcare. The one thing that I do see is all the technology is phenomenal, but in greater Minnesota, my house, I don't have the internet. I use my phone, that's all I have. So broadband is a really big issue for greater Minnesota. And so the technology is phenomenal for metro areas, but I think we still need to address the seniors in greater Minnesota that are truly isolated. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Rood, and thanks for fighting for stronger broadband in greater Minnesota, which rolls right into you, Senator Curran, one of your big missions.
Thank you, Madam Chair. State Senator Mark Curran, representing Senate District 32, Chisago and Isani Counties, and I also love this committee, as well as it drove me into voluntarily joining HHS as well to make sure we have the care. some people do go there voluntarily. But for me, we all have those experiences. I was lucky enough to have last 2 years of my father's life managing all of his care. That was 25 years ago. Is transformative in the ability of accepting your own mortality and thus then providing us in a position to be able to manage all those we love around us in their end of life scenarios, which is going to occur for every one of us. And so to play a role in it and to see where we're moving as well as being a baby boomer, a little selfishness about wanting to my own care. But that's what drives me. So I love the conversations, and I think we can really drive, and we need to put the fuel on the fire of how we make a quick transformation of what took 40 years to put us in this position, and we don't have 40 years to get back to provide great quality care. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator Curran. Senator Putnam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Eric Putnam. I represent St. Cloud, the greater St. Cloud area, and I too love this committee. In terms of the presentations today, I think thought they were incredibly informative, and it was great to hear that there is so much innovation occurring in this space. But I also do second Senator Rood's concern. Greater Minnesota, we have some real issues with connectivity The biggest crisis that I think that we face with senior care right now is social isolation and getting seniors more integrated in their communities, and without broadband or internet access, those kinds of things become bigger challenges than they should be.
Thank you. I completely agree. Senator Hoffman.
Hey, thank you, Madam Chair, and what a great series of presentations this morning. And I am now two things I'm taking away. Abler's to the left of you, and Curran volunteered. That's all I needed from this moment on to do that. But in all sincerity, you know, Minnesota has more people 65 and older than they do in the K-12 system, right? We knew that was coming. We talked about it. And we're behind the eight ball on really being proactive. But seeing organizations coming in saying, you know, we can address this, because it gets down to a couple of things. What is the value of the dollar at the end of the day when we're trying to get that to an individual? I'm stealing that from Senator Curran, but I'm liking it. The second thing that it gets to is, you know, in the last few years, our own department has spent $1 billion on MnChoice's assessments. We spend more money on assessing than we do really going at the root cause of things and getting to the proactive measure on seeing how we can get services to people the most efficient way, and that it's person-centered. And I loved all the presentations that you had today, Chair Housley, and I do love being on this committee. I absolutely do. So thank you for letting me be here.
Thank you so much, Senator Hoffman. And Senator Eakin is also on our committee, but he had a previous engagement this morning. So Senator Karen Housley from Stillwater represent Forest Lake, the surrounding St. Croix Valley. The genesis of this committee was, like everybody here said, taking care of our aging parents. And it's hard. It's really, really hard. So with innovations and companies like we heard here today, which maybe we'll hear more later, it really can help. And times are changing. And with COVID, things, like you said, Senator Putnam, the social isolation was almost worse than the pandemic. So with that, I will email you on when our next committee is and what our agenda will be. But thank you, everybody, for showing up and being on Zoom and YouTube. And with that, the committee is adjourned.